originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is, of course, the show trainers listen to, and we are happy to have you listening with us tonight on Sirius 219 XM Channel 206, and of course, everyone streaming us worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer and the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are with you in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios right here in the heart of the Bluegrass. And JT, looking forward to a special edition of Trainer Talk here tonight. People will remember a few weeks back, we kind of broke protocol, so to speak, when we combined John Sakura from Hillendale and Craig and Conrad Banderoff from Denali Stud, and we put together a Trainer Talk program with them, even though they're not trainers. We're going to take that same approach here tonight, because when you think about our title sponsor, Fasig Tipton, you think about owners, you think about breeders, and you think about sellers, and all of those are embodied in our special guests here tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun show. I was lucky enough to meet Kim Heath at EquestriCon. She happened by our table. Fateful day.
Now she's stuck with us
for a whole hour. but it made me think of you right away, because her involvement with Holy Bull goes back to the very beginning, and Holy Bull being your favorite horse, I thought it was a natural. And we'll talk more about that as the show goes on.
Yeah, Kim involved with breaking Holy Bull and getting him started on that championship career. Kim, her husband Bonnie, are both with us here in studio, and they are, of course, as Jude alluded to, with Bonnie Heath Farm. And that's a legacy which began in many ways with 1956 Kentucky Derby winner Needles and continued with horses like Honor Glide and champion Holy Bull. And it's going to be a lot of fun to visit with them here. And Kim, Bonnie, really appreciate you coming in. Kim, we're going to start with you. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah, appreciate it.
Ladies first, and to get an opportunity to be aboard Holy Bull is certainly special. We'll talk about that, because as Jude mentioned, that's my all-time favorite horse, so we're going to make sure touch on that. Bonnie, how about for you? What a ride, huh?
It really was. And kind of stand back and watch this thing happen. It was when it happens really, really quick. But looking back, it was a great trip.
Really. Yeah, a great trip indeed. All right, let's start from the beginning, and let's talk a little bit about the history of Bonnie Heath. And we touched on this even a little bit before we came on the air today, Bonnie, but it goes back to your family and your father. Tell us the story.
Correct. My dad and his business partner, lifetime business partner, Jack Dudley, were actually in the horse business. My dad and mom moved to Fort Lauderdale when I was 2 months old, 1950. And they had some horses. They had a bunch of cheap horses, and they had this, that, and the other. And they were getting ready to get out of the business, and Hugh Fontaine, who was their trainer, came to them and said he had found this two-year-old, and he wanted them to buy this two-year-old. And they really didn't want any part of it. They were saying, oh, let's not do this. Well, Hugh says, you know, I'm going to sell my car, I'm going to mortgage my house and all this stuff, which was probably suspect at best.
Trainers.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, they bought the horse. They paid $20,000 for him, which was a lot of money now, but it was a lot of money in 1955. And of course, the rest is history. Needles became champion two-year-old, won the Hopeful that year. Saratoga won, was a whopping $30,000 purse.
Wow.
And my dad used to laugh about how naive they were at the time, because he and Jack Dudley went to Ocala before Needles ever started as a three-year-old in 1956 and bought farms. because he said, well, the logical progression was we would have to have a place to stand him a stud. He was a Florida bred after all, and we needed a place to stand him a stud. So they bought farms, and, of course, the rest of it played out. He wins the Florida Derby and the Flamingo, and the Kentucky Derby, second in the Preakness, and wins the Belmont. So it was really neat to watch. I'm a child. I'm 6 years old. I don't know what's going on. But,
yeah.
But looking back and listening to my dad, and we talked about the Florida breeding industry, and I said, well, did needles cause that to happen? And my dad wouldn't take credit for that. He said, no. He said, what happened down there was going to happen anyway. He said, we speeded it up a little bit. He said, but it was going to happen anyway.
Really? Yep. Wow. Wow. And Needles, of course, not only won the Kentucky Derby, but he was the first Florida-bred ever to compete in the Kentucky Derby, right?
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
A special
did
horse.
You go to the races?
No, I did not. No? I watched it in Fort Lauderdale. I'll never mm-hmm. forget it. And it was surreal, as they say. And, of course, I've been hooked ever since. I used to go to the backside at Hialeah and ride Needle's lead pony around the backside. I was, 4 and 5 years old, and his name was Rusty, and they put me up on Rusty, and they said, just go on and have fun because Rusty knows where he lives, and he'll come back eventually. It was a different world back then, obviously.
Would he come back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
At lunchtime like you do.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as it's 12 o'clock.
Yep.
No doubt.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Needles goes on. He wins the Kentucky Derby, finishes second in the Preakness, and comes back and wins the Belmont. And this is really what ended up kind of keeping your dad in the business and led to Bonnie Heath Farm eventually.
Absolutely.
Am I saying that right?
Yeah, that farm they had bought in '50s, early '56 became Bonnie Heath Farm. And Needles retired stud there, and Dudley's farm backed up to ours. We were right, basically right next door. And they had the relationship between those two men is amazing. It came out of the oil patch in southern Illinois and southern Indiana. And during World War II, nobody in the oil business went to war. I mean, they had to stay home and make oil. And my dad had his own company, and Jack Dudley was his tool pusher. I'm not sure what that entails, but it's, it's an important part of oil drilling. And my dad had a severe leg injury, about lost his leg, and had to go. It was in the hospital for almost a year. Well, Jack stepped up and took over running the company while Dad was gone. And so when my dad finally was able to come back to work, they became partners, and they stayed partners.
Wow. And you just followed Dad into the business?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've got it bad. My sisters didn't have it, but, I love the horse.
Yeah.
The business, sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't. But the horse I love.
Kim, how about for you? Where did that love of horse racing begin?
I was a horse-crazy little girl. Grew up in a family of non-horse people, but I would save up my money for allowance or extra jobs I'd do, and save my lunch money, and then go get Mom to drive me somewhere where I could ride a horse.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. So
where was this? Was this in Florida?
Jacksonville.
Okay.
Yes, I'm a probably sixth generation Floridian.
Okay.
Not too many of those around.
Yeah. That's
so did you want to be a jockey at that point, or?
I didn't care. As long as it had horse on it, I wanted it.
Yeah.
But my uncles outside of New Smyrna Beach, Florida, would use the horses for hunting deer. And so all Thanksgivings or Christmas, anytime I could go there, I'd stay with them and ride the horses.
Use the horses for hunting deer. But you just give me a new idea. I might have to start riding horses.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
First
this
you
can
have
get really ugly. You see me with a gun on a horse chasing a deer.
Yes.
No.
The first thing you have to do is teach your horse to shoot from his back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So they don't throw you off and run the other way.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you bow hunt, so you could do it the
we
Indian
do it that way.
Way
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot quieter that way.
That's right.
Yeah. The horse wouldn't mind so much.
Yeah.
No.
So what led you into the horse racing side of things? Am I going way ahead in the story here? Or?
No, you're okay. Good. You're good. My in college in University of Florida, go Gators.
Oh, ooh, we're playing UK tomorrow. Or Saturday. Yeah.
So Ocala being right down from Gainesville, during college I would be working in Ocala. And actually I started my first year working racing quarter horses. And during the summer, I worked at Pompano Park. Not a pretty thing. But I loved the racing, and I loved the atmosphere of the horsemanship. So I figured that I better find a way to make some money. And that was not in quarter horses at that time. It was in thoroughbreds. So I moved over to thoroughbreds. My first job was working for Junior Cerna at Lamb Home Farm now. Back then it was Murdy, and I worked for him and 2 years, and then kind of went on into being a bloodstock agent, and when Bonnie and I met when I was a bloodstock agent.
Okay.
And actually, I still do a lot of that. But so we got together, and our first date was just out to dinner. The second date was the Kentucky Derby for Ali Sheba.
That's a good
pretty smooth
date.
Move.
What?
And of course, who did he bet? Was Ali Sheba.
Was she trying to buy a horse for you when you met?
Yeah, it's a funny story. I was a stockbroker at the time. I was not involved a whole lot in the thoroughbred business, but I was a stockbroker. Had been for about 12, 13 years. And she had made some money on a deal, and came in, and we just happened to have the best rate on money market. And she called around and checked the race and stuff. So here she comes, and we're talking, and I don't want to talk to her. I mean, of course, I haven't seen her yet. See, I don't want to talk to her because, you know, there's no money in money market. I'm busy. I'm trying to hustle and make money and do this stuff. And then she walks, and we probably talk for 30 minutes. And then from then on, it became trying to go out to dinner. And finally, it took us several months to be able to go to dinner. And it's a long and involved story, but it's a neat story. And after the Derby, our second date, we haven't been apart since. That was obviously 87, so we haven't been apart since.
That's a great story.
It worked.
Yeah, it worked somehow. So you mentioned working as a stockbroker. At that point, were you still involved with horse racing?
I was. I had a horse here and a horse there, not a whole lot of pieces of horses. But the interesting story, Kim and I went to Keeneland for the 1991 breeding sale in January. And I would always call Mom and Dad when we got back. We're back in town. Everything good. Oh, yeah. So coming back from the January sale, I called them up. And it's probably 9 o'clock at night, maybe 10 o'clock at night. And I talked to my dad, and I said, hey, Kim and I are back in town. Well, Kim and I had talked to my dad briefly about running his farm. He already had a guy he had for years and years. And out of the blue, he says, you know that deal about you and Kim running the farm? I said, well, yes, sir. I said, we haven't talked about it for a while. He said, do you still want to do it? And so Kim's unpacking and doing whatever, and I hollered across the house at her, you still want to run the farm? And she hollers, yeah, I guess. And so I told Dad, I said, yeah, we do. He said, good, be here in the morning. Click, click. He didn't say goodbye, you know, just click. That was him. He just click. So we show up the next morning, and we're running Bonnie Heath Farm, and we got 100 and, I don't know, 50 or 60 horses on the farm. And we're thrown into a situation where about two-thirds of the employees had quit the night before. I don't know what happened after that. Never asked. None of my business. But we started running the farm that day, and then 5 days later, Holy Bull was born. That was January 19th. The bull was born on the 24th.
Like it was meant to be.
It was really strange. And we had no foaling man. We had a guy living in the barn that we never would allow, but we needed help so badly, we wouldn't let him stay in the barn. And Kim's checking mares every night before she goes home, and she checks Sharon Brown, and she's going, and Kim knows it. So she goes in and she gets the guy in the tack room, and lo and behold, about the time that that happens, the guy that's the maintenance man is driving by, he sees the lights on, and he stopped in, and it took those two guys and Kim to fold Holy Bull. She said his hoof was monster. She knew he was going to be a monster because she's foaled a lot of babies, but it was one of those things that was supposed to be. And you can believe this or not, but we tried to run that guy down that lived in the tack room. He stayed with us for 2 or 3 weeks after, maybe a couple of months, I don't know, but disappeared. But we had his name, and we tried to track him down after the bull became famous, and it was as if he was never existed.
Wow.
It was really...
That's a little eerie.
Yeah, I know. I loved it.
Wow. Great story. Yeah. Talking with Kim and Bonnie Heath of Bonnie Heath Farm here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, if you miss any portion of the show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out a podcast at your leisure. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network, on iTunes. Kim, that had to be a very special night for you. You didn't know how special it was going to be when you helped pull Holy Bull, but we know what he ended up doing, going on and being a champion and winning all of those outstanding races, Horse of the Year. Talk a little bit about when you started to realize, okay, maybe I'm around something special here.
There is one little part of that. You were mentioning that, you never know. Sometimes you get a message, inside. When that mare was going down to fall, the hoof was coming, and it was huge. And I said, I'm not going to get this done myself, so and I asked for the help. And when he was born, when he stood up, his size was huge. He came up to my armpit, and he was just so impressive. He was like he was balanced and strong, and just stood up very, very strong right away. And I called Jimmy and woke him up to tell him about this colt. And normally we wouldn't call at night and wake up the owners to tell them. Normally we wait till the next morning and send them a little picture or whatever. But I just had to call Jimmy. This was a very special colt. But in the months after that, of course, farm life, busy. The gang in the mare barn are raising this colt amongst all the others. And I'm working mostly in the training barn. I'm training the horses at that time. And also, we had stallions, so we were doing that too. And I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to him individually until he came to the training barn as a long yearling. And he was just a little bit bigger, a little more mature, but had a great mind. He was aloof. And when we started tacking and everything, he took everything in stride, no problems anywhere. When the rider went on to get on him, all the way on him the first time, he laid down in the stall. like he was looking at the rider thinking, why are you on my back? I don't know. It was rather funny, the rider hollering at everybody, you gotta see this.
Still on.
Yes. But he figured it out pretty quickly and stood right up and went on. When we started working with them on the track, my training method was to go through the gate to get on the track and go through the gate to get off the track, and you never have gate problems. So I would be on the pony, and I'd go through first, and then one by one they would all follow me through. And he kept holding back. The jock would kind of urge him to go forward and get in line and go on through, and he would just kind of hold back a little bit until everybody else went on through the gate. And then he looked up and scooted through in kind of like a crouching manner, like he was afraid he wasn't going to fit.
I know that feeling.
Wow, those idiosyncrasies that, yes, so many of these horses have. And I'm sure that's not the only horse that you've encountered with little quirks such, sure, as that, right?
Oh, yes. They all have something. But he trained super. Nothing that really stood him out until, I believe it was the third breeze, because when Billy Kroll, Jimmy's son, came to see the horses, and it was getting close, it was probably April, because all the horses would leave right after the Derby to go to Jimmy at Monmouth. And so Bill would come up and watch them once or twice, but, yeah, usually in April. And it was his third breeze, I guess it was, third or fourth. Anyway, I told the jocks, I said, okay, just instead of holding them head and head this time, let if one of them feels like they want to go on, let them go on so Bill can see something. And holy bull, that couldn't have been more than a 3/8 breeze, and he just drew off. No effort at all. He just drew off.
Was that the wow moment?
Yeah. And Bill and I looking at each other like, you see this? Are you seeing what I'm seeing?
Yeah.
So Bill called Jimmy and told him about it. And so everybody's, you know, guardedly excited because that's awful early to tell anything. And but when I really knew it was a special horse was when Jimmy called after he breezed him his first half. And he said, this is a good horse. And Jimmy would never say things like that. That's like Wayne Lucas telling everybody about how great his horse is. You know,
right.
This is a good horse.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he would know. Jimmy Kroll, of course, the trainer of Holy Bull. And then he debuted at Monmouth in 1993. He won that race, broke his maiden immediately first time out. And then, well, you know, the rest is history. He would go on and win an allowance race and then the Futurity. And then from there, he was really off and running, so to speak, and a very special racehorse. Kim and Bonnie Heath from Bonnie Heath Farm with us in the studio, our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studio here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton.
When you started training horses, where did you take your influence from?
A little bit from a lot of different trainers. I would say that Junior Cerna had the biggest impact on me in how to prep a horse. And but I didn't really have a lot. I mean, I used to sit on the rail with Fred Hooper while some of his horses trained over the years, and in a lot of different places that I had connections. But and I'm sure y'all know about how Junior has trained 9 champions from the farms that he has worked on, plus being a trainer at the track before that. He was successful, and so he's a pretty amazing guy, and I still work with him. We have horses of our own in training with Junior right now.
That's cool. Well, so you're basically just a natural trainer. I mean, it's just part of you. You mentioned having that feeling inside sometimes when you see horses, and people often ask us about what people mean by presence when they're looking at horses and that kind of thing. Can you articulate that a little bit about what sometimes when you see a horse, you just have that feeling that this might be a good horse?
Yes, it is a feeling. And it's something that, you know, a lot of people pinch off those messages that come in and not believing them. But I learned early on to allow that information to come in and use it. For an example, we were trying to find a good stallion to start the farm with Bonnie and I instead of his father's influence. It would be our creation of this new business. Mm-hmm. And we looked at stallions and stallion prospects all over the place here in Kentucky and trying to find the right horse to bring down there. Well, I got a message from someone to look at a horse at Belmont. We flew up to Belmont with Christophe Clement, and the horse's name was Honor Grades. And as soon as Christophe pulled the blanket back off of this horse, I looked at Bonnie and I said, this is the horse. And it was just that overwhelming, like a overwhelming feeling of goodness that comes from that kind of situation.
And you got that sense immediately.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It's too bad we're not on television, because as you're describing this, and even as you were describing Holy Bull and some of the training quirks that he had early on, Bonnie was sitting here next to you and just nodding his head yes, and it was almost like she was taking you on a little trip down memory lane.
Oh, yeah.
Bonnie.
Oh yeah, I remember her saying that. She said, "This is the horse." I'm kind of looking around like, "Oh, what? Where is he?" Because I wasn't tuned in like she was or like she is.
Yeah.
And She knew. And he was a phenomenal horse for us. And he got our stallion ranks going. Did the shuttle thing, went to New Zealand, and we actually went to New Zealand to see him, and it was an opportunity. But a very successful horse, and wound up coming to Darby Dan, and unfortunately died prematurely in a paddock accident. But, you know, a half to AP Indian Summer Squall, Danzig horse, that we've always liked Danzig horses, and he was special. You could... I had an agent tell me one time that we were too emotionally attached to our horses, talking about Honor Grays in particular. And I said, let me tell you something. I said, you need to walk about 150 yards from this office across the street to the stallion barn. I said, and just stand in front of his stall. And I said, you tell me the hair will raise on your arms.
Yeah.
He had that impact on me.
You know, I've heard many people say that. You can't get attached to your horses. It's a business, right? But I don't know one owner that doesn't get somewhat attached, if not all the way in, on the horses that they're involved with, right? You have to, don't you?
Yeah. Why
bother? The love of the horse. That's what the sport is all about.
Why bother?
Yeah, right. go work in a factory.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just people that don't get emotionally attached, you ought to be sorting socks someplace.
Great line. And now you have Honor Grade's son, Honor Glide, right, standing stud at Bonnie Heath Farm.
We had him.
Yeah. Had him. Okay, yeah. He's not. Okay.
He passed away.
He did. Okay, I didn't realize that. Okay.
He died the best way, breeding a mare.
Wow, if we could all be so lucky. Well, pretty special. You can go to BonnieHeathFarm.com to check out more information on all of their success. We're going to continue this visit with Kim and Bonnie Heath right after our next commercial break. We'll talk about some of the other success stories that they've been part of. We'll talk about some of their philosophies when it comes to raising a good horse, because they've done it extremely well. We'll do that when we come back. This is Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Make some Mid-Atlantic magic by attending the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic Fall Yearling Sale October 2nd and 3rd in Timonia, Maryland. The Mid-Atlantic Fall Yearling Sale is a top-ranked sale by percentage of winners sold, percentage of two-year-old winners sold, and percentage of repeat winners sold. And with a 32% larger catalog and yearlings eligible for a variety of Mid-Atlantic state-bred racing programs, this Fasig Tipton Fall Yearling Sale is the place to be. Download your catalog today at FasigTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Maya, what a finish to the contest.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
Stuart Morris possesses 30 years of experience in the thoroughbred business and started consigning horses on his own just 2 years ago. Already, one of his sales graduates, Mel Agassi, found himself on the Kentucky Derby Trail and now has 3 2-year-old stakes winners in 2017. Tremont winner He Hate Me, undefeated Kelly's Humor, winner of the Ellis Park Debutante, and Pacific Gale, who won Monmouth's Sorority Stakes. Those three coming from just 65 yearlings sold by Stuart Morris last year. Visit the Stuart Morris consignments at upcoming sales to find your next winner.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And the field turns for home with the ball to catch. Holy Ball coming to mid-stretch with a 2.5 length lead. Devil His Duel giving his all. Colonial Affair giving his all. But it's Holy Ball. Holy Ball winning like a champion with devastating ease. Holy Ball tied with the best horse. horses in training. He wins by 5 lengths, beating Devil Is Due and Colonial Affair.
Tom Durkin with the call. Holy Bull, one of those brilliant performances in that Hall of Fame career. Of course, winning the Woodward. Toyed with the best horses in training. One of my favorite calls of all time, too. Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, Mike Penna, and Jude Feld. We are in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network. If you missed any portion of our show tonight, remember, head on over to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast at your leisure, and what a visit it has been, visiting with Kim and Bonnie Heath of Bonnie Heath Farm in Florida. If you're not familiar with that farm, well, it's about 78 acres, and it's located about 15 miles north of Ocala in Reddick, Florida, and they do a tremendous job. They have raised so many top horses, including the great Holy Bull, and we told you that story in the first half of the show, and JT looking to more stories here in the second half.
Oh, yeah, it's been a great show. Glad I thought of it.
Kim, we talked about foaling Holy Bull, and then we talked about some of his early training. We hear that call from Tom Durkin, and such a great call. What, I'll ask both of you this, but we'll start with Kim. Your favorite Holy Bull moment was?
Oh, goodness. My favorite race. You just played it.
The Woodward.
Yes. And I was talking to Durkin during the EquestriCon, and he said that, he said, I'm really surprised because everybody tells me the Travers was the best call. And I said, well, I didn't really hear the call for the Travers. We were down at, what, the eighth pole? We were at the eighth pole, and the crowd was screaming so loud I couldn't hear anything, and we were just watching, and we, of course, they were he and Concern were past us, and I did hear Durkin say, and there's cause for concern. And but we're just going crazy. How was that, the last bit of it you were talking about,
what was neat when they went by us, I had my binoculars on them. And I'm one of those old school guys that love binoculars. But you could see the bull drop, physically drop several inches and lengthen that stride to fight Concern off. And we started running because we couldn't tell where we were. And we'd run 50 yards or 50 feet, I mean, and check the television, see if they had the photo up. And we finally got down there and to the winner's circle. But it was cause for concern.
Yeah, I remember it to this day. I was with my brother. We were in section X of the grandstand, all the way down. And right where Concern was actually making his move on that turn before they turned into the stretch. And it really was one of those very special moments. Do you have, Bonnie, a favorite Holy Bull moment? Might not even be a fair question because there were so many good ones.
I do. And it has to do with his last race. We were at Gulfstream when he made that last race when he got hurt, and we stayed in the stands because we didn't want to go back there and if it was bad. And so we finally got a call that everything was okay. So we went backside, and I'm kind of standing back on the rail watching him, and he's annoyed, say the least, the bull is, because he didn't get to run that day, and he didn't get to do his normal thing and run. And everybody that came to his stall, he's trying to eat him up. I mean, he's just annoyed. And the only two people that went to that stall, that webbing, that he didn't try to eat up were Mike Smith and Kim. And they could stand there and pet on him and love on him. But Jimmy, Bill Kroll, anybody that went to that stall, he was just trying to eat him up because he didn't get to run his race. Jimmy always said that Mr. Prospector was the smartest horse he'd ever been around. Until the bull came along, and he said the bull surpassed Mr. Prospector.
When you have a horse that's that special, and of course Holy Bull left us this year, he died in June. When you have a horse that's that special, what's it like when you get the news that he's gone?
Well, he actually was not doing well back in September last year. We were up here for the sale, and we were surprised that he made it as long as he did. But it was tough. I would always go into the stud barn before Kim would, because the first time we went up there, we played played a little game with Philip, the stud groom out there that had Holy Bull. We asked him to bring the bull out, and it wasn't a game. It turned into that, but it wasn't supposed to be. But anyway, Philip's holding the bull, and I'm just kind of standing back watching. Well, Kim walks up, and Philip probably thinks she's going to pat him or something. Well, she just reaches up and just hugs his neck. And I'm watching Philip, and his eyes just kept getting bigger. And he was so shocked he couldn't say anything. But here's Kim hanging on the bull's neck, and Philip's got the shank like, well, too late now. But he would actually, I could stand and watch his stall, and she'd come around the corner and start talking, and his ears would prick. And he knew her voice for several years.
Wow.
After he first got to Jonabell.
It's amazing. He had such a following. He was one of the most popular horses at the farm. And I mean, that farm is the who's who of stallions and racehorses. But I mean, everybody that went there wanted to see Holy Bull. I remember being at a stallion show probably 10 years ago. And they brought out all these great horses, Medaglia d'Oro and all. And then somebody said, well, we want to see Holy Bull, right? And okay. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll bring him out. And yeah, I mean, he just, everybody that went there wanted to see him. And sometimes, you know, they wouldn't bring him out, but they'd take people to the stall and show him. And
he'd eat his carrots and his candy, yeah, whatever they'd give him.
Whatever they'd give him, yeah. Yeah, very, very cool. I mean, yeah, there's so few horses that have that. You know, I mean, in today's day and age, really, that have such a following. I mean, I know, you know, you've been in love with them forever. And
well,
so
I think it's the great ones, right? I mean,
yeah,
the great ones, the Rachel Alexandras of the world, right?
Yeah.
The Songbirds. I mean, they all have their legion of fans, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I think he might have been like the first horse of recent era in the last, 30 years or whatever. That had that.
How much of that do you think had to do with his name?
Probably
it's
some.
A great name, right?
Yeah.
Rachel Alexander. Not Rachel Alexander. Rachel. How about Rachel Carpenter, who owned him? She was the A&P heiress, and she actually died the day he made his first start. The story's been around.
Yeah.
But she willed all her racing stock to Jimmy, and what a wise choice it was, because Jimmy knew what to do. And, but she was going to, the story I got was she was going to name the offspring Holy Cow because she was a big Yankees fan. And Phil Rizzuto would always say, Holy Cow, Holy Cow. And of course it's a colt. And so it becomes Holy Bull. That was the story that I got on it. Whether that's true, I don't know, but it was the name. It was the color. It was the incredible speed that he had, and he could use it whenever he wanted. I mean, he didn't have to have the lead, but you don't want to go run with him either. But it's just a lot of things. And it was his intelligence. I think it had a lot to do with it.
We've touched on his trainer, Jimmy Kroll, a few times over the course of this interview so far. Jimmy was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1994. He won more than 1,900 races in his career. What made him so good?
I'll let Kim speak to this in a second. But think about the variety of national champions that he He had Parka, who was grass champion. He had Housebuster, who was sprint champion. He had Forward Gal, who was a two-year-old filly champion. He had the Bull, and I probably left one out of there. But he had just horses from all different categories. So he wasn't locked into being a grass trainer or a filly trainer. He was just a man who knew his horses and didn't brag about them. Didn't brag about much of anything, but he was special to us too because he included us in the bull's career. He would invite us and the farm. We had a neat deal at the farm. We would send cards to the bull before a big race, and we would get all the employees at the farm to sign this card and send it on. Well, before the Eclipse Awards, we took out an ad in the Thoroughbred Record, was it? Thoroughbred Record, and we had
Thoroughbred Times.
And so we took out this, I don't know, half page ad or whatever it was, and we had a Brahma bull on the farm at that time, and he was pretty friendly, thank goodness, big old gray thing, and we had all the employees at the farm line up behind him, and somebody rigged up a halo on a stick and was holding it over this Brahma bull's head. And
another brave soul.
Yeah, from behind. And we snapped several pictures, but got one that said, and the ad said, "We're behind the bull."
And, great.
Yeah, and it was a wonderful
deal. Clever.
But Jimmy, that's Ken Breitenbecker, our manager, came up with that idea, I think. But it included every race always included the farm employees. It was their boy.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Ken, what made Jimmy Kroll so good?
He loved the horses, all of them, and he put his hands on them, and he watched them start to finish every day, 7 days a week. Everything. And he didn't miss anything. So, I think that he was one of the old-time trainers that did things that way. And nothing against the way people train now, or a lot of people train now, because of the demand for the changes in the industry has made them do things differently now. But that worked for Jimmy, and he carried it on till the end. He trained almost till he passed away. So it was part of his soul.
If you are just joining us, you're listening to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on HRN. We are visiting with Kim and Bonnie Heath of Bonnie Heath Farm in Redick, Florida. And you might be expecting to hear a trainer on this program tonight, but we are breaking protocol, and for very good reason. As you've heard throughout the program, Kim has been involved with breaking horses and training horses for a long time. Bonnie, his dad's legacy dating back to Needles, the 1956 Kentucky Derby winner, now carried on through so many of the greats that they have raised at Bonnie Heath. And you guys, you think about that success that you have had over the years, and you've been truly blessed. I think you'd both agree with that.
Oh, yes.
What's the philosophy that you have when you're raising horses and bringing new horses into the game?
Well, the horse is always first at our farm. When we took over my dad's farm in '91, it was kind of a joke because some of the fences were not standing real straight, and some of the barns had some crumbly stuff. And we always made the horse first, no matter what. The fence could fall down, the barn could fall down, didn't make any difference. We didn't always have to mow. It wasn't the cleanest operation in the world, but the horses always looked good. They were always taken care of. And that's been number one. It still is number one at our place. And things look a little better than they did, but
only slightly.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I tell you a quick funny story about my dad. I'm driving down the road with him one day, and it's right before Kim and I took over. I guess maybe we already had, but he had a mare who had produced a stakes horse, good stakes horse filly. His name was Chickasha. Well, the mare's name was War Queen, and she was a cribber. And she's standing there, we're driving down the road one day, and she's cribbing on this board out in the field. And he kind of motioned for me to stop. And Chickasha had just won a second stakes, and he kind of looks out and he says, "He's that mare cribbing." He looks over at me and he says, "Get that mare a new board." And I said, "Yes, sir."
That's great.
Wow, that is outstanding. You said when you took over the farm, your dad called. He said, "Hey, would you want to take over the farm?" You said, "Yes, let's do this." You talked to Kim. She said, "Okay, we're on board." Did you know anything about running a farm at that point, or was it all kind of just learning as you go?
Well, as far as direct hands-on experience, I did not.
Right.
Kim did. Kim had her own place and ran her own operation for several years. So the combination of the two of us, it worked. But, you show up with 150 horses, and some of them had name tags and some of them didn't, and about a third of a normal crew, and it was interesting. That's all I can say. It was interesting. I wouldn't want to do it again.
How long did it take you to give up the stock broker business and then become a full-time farm guy?
Not long. The brokerage industry changed a lot when they, in the mid-80s, they came in with computer trades and stuff like that. So I had actually been out of that business for a while before. And I'd done some other family stuff, some property management and this, that, and the other. But my passion, my love has always been, the horses. And so it was easy. It was easy.
Talk about some of the other horses that you've been around over the years that have kind of captured your heart and that you're never going to forget. Kim?
Oh, gosh. There's a new one every year. well, we had Kalu, who was a good racehorse. We had him in partnership with a guy named Rob Shadle. And he was with Christoph Clement. And we had a lot of fun with him. He ended up having a very serious upper respiratory infection and then had throat problems after that. So never really came back to his game after that. But now he's living the rest of his life on the farm. He gets to tease some mares and have some fun.
Yeah, he won the Hawthorne Derby, and he won the Forerunner Stakes here at Keeneland. Very good grass horse.
You mentioned Christoph Clement, and when you were talking about Jimmy Kroll and his variety of champions, I feel the same way about Christoph. I don't really know Christoph. I'm a huge fan. I am a huge fan. We've met, but that's it. He wouldn't know me if he walked in the door. But the guy trains two-year-olds. He trains grass horses. He trains fillies. He can train a horse to go a mile and a quarter. He can train a horse to run 5 furlongs. You know, I mean, the guy's amazing, and I think he's very Jimmy Kroll. It didn't even dawn on me till you said that, but I think that's the case.
Very, very much hands-on, and if you do an interview with him and you really want to get the bang for your buck, make him bring his wife, Valerie, with him for the interview, because that will make it all even better.
He likes to show off.
she'll keep him in line.
Yeah. Does she work with him? She doesn't work with him, right? No.
She works harder. She raised their kids.
Yeah. I can imagine it's even more difficult than raising some of the horses, especially the ones that you've been around for sure.
The other horse, of course, comes to mind is Easy, Honor Glide.
Yeah.
And we sold him as a yearling at Fasig Tipton. $31,000, I believe, was the number. And Jim Day, who used to work for Samson years ago, really an excellent trainer. Jim Day, I don't think he was even on Jim Day's list, and he was picking out horses for Rob Shadle. Rob's name comes up again. And they saw him walking at a different consignment where we were selling him, and they bought him. They bought him for $31,000. And Rob was always very gracious to Kim and I and allowed us to be part of that whole equation. Well, Honor Glide broke his first start at Fairgrounds in an unbelievable effort. Probably maybe the best race he ever ran. I don't know. And went on to win 2 Grade 1s. But he went on to sweep the Arlington, the Mid-America Triple at Arlington. And that series at that time had never been swept since 1966 when Buck Passer did it. And it hadn't been swept since. So he's the only horse in 51 years that has swept that series. And an amazing task indeed. So, he made his selling a foal of Honor Grades in 1997, August sale in Ocala, a piece of cake. Anybody could sell one because he was so hot at that time. But after his four-year-old season, Honor Glide had a bad four-year-old season. And Rob sent him back to us to see if we could get him back like he was. And Kim had him with the training barn, and he got off the van, and he was not a happy horse. I mean, it was very obvious. His hair coat was dull. He was listless. And it was probably 2 or 3 weeks at least out in his paddock before he ever got down and rolled. And Jude, you know how important it is for a horse to get down and get dirty.
Yeah.
I remember Kim come running in the office one day, and she said, "He's dirty, he's dirty." and she was excited because he had gotten down and rolled. And we gave him herbs, we gave him acupuncture, you name it, we did it for this horse. And Rob's a wonderful guy, but Rob's a little type A, and Rob's pushing on, "Is he back, is he back?" And not yet, not yet. So finally, Kim worked with him enough and thought he was back to where he was. And so Rob says, comes to the farm, and we show him, "Rob, he's back." And Rob says, "Well, good, put your money where your mouth is." So he said, "I want you to buy 20% of this horse." And we said, "Well, okay, we'll do it." So we went up, we did some stuff, and we bought 20% of the horse. And he said, I said, I'll make you a better deal. He said, "If he wins the stakes this year," he said, "I'll give you an extra 5%. So we agreed on Christoph as the trainer, and he was, I believe, second in his first start at Belmont. And I mean, he was flying at the end, one of those finishes you love to see if you don't win. And came back and won the Bowling Green in track record time in his second start, which was a Grade 2. and then went to Saratoga and won the Sword Dancer, which is a group a grade one. And so we had our extra 5%. And then he raced until he was seven. He won a grade two, I believe it was, at Woodbine as a seven-year-old. And so he's quite a horse. Won $1,000,004, I believe it was.
That's cool.
Yeah, really tough as nails. Two-time Breeders' Cup participant, too.
Yep.
Ran in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
That was another story. That
strange call. Yeah, finished behind Skipaway that day. He was eighth, and then came back in the Breeders' Cup Turf 2 years later. Yeah. You talk about a horse that was so durable,
he was.
And courageous and had that heart. Honor Glide certainly possessed those characteristics.
He finally figured at eight he could run around in the middle of the pack and not have to try too hard, and we were going to feed him anyway. So.
Kim was going to feed him. How long did you keep him? Did you train him on the farm until you sent him in? How long did you keep him?
Oh, probably. Let's see. He ran in the
November.
In November, and then Christoph had his first start back at Belmont in probably June.
So you had him quite
a
while.
Him, yeah.
Yeah. The time makes all the difference in the world. Yes. Huh?
And we figured out with that horse we needed to give him a couple months at the farm every winter.
Yeah.
And he, you know, you can see by his record, he went right on as a 100% sound all those years. Right.
See, you're a way better trainer than you know. When are you going to hang out your shingle?
No.
Have you ever thought about it?
I did have a little bit of thinking about that back when I was training, that maybe I should go on, but I didn't want to leave the farm. Mm-hmm. You know, the farm was, I could do it all. I could have the mares and foals. I could foal mares at night. I could go in the breeding shed and take care of that. And, I could do it all there.
What's the most rewarding part of being on that side of the business?
Probably foaling mares.
It's like Christmas, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like Christmas every day.
And at the end of foaling season, you're thinking, oh, this is finally the last one.
You want a vacation, yeah.
And then the next year, like right now, I'm starting to think about what we're going to do to get ready for foaling season again. When's the first one due?
Yeah. It's
looking forward to it.
It is great. It's so much fun.
Kim and Bonnie Heath joining us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios. They are in town here in Lexington, Kentucky for the horse sales. And you do that quite often. You travel all over the country. You visit all the major sales. When you go to a sale, what are some of the objectives that you have in mind? And I guess it depends on whether you're looking to buy or looking to sell, right?
That's right. We try to fit the horse to the sale, and or the sale to the horse, whichever works best. Some of them are going to be ready to sell as yearlings just because that's their best look, but other ones are going to look better as weanlings. That's a big guess. So, okay, we've got one here that's really special, but is it going to be that much better as a yearling, or are we better off to just go now? And so we try to figure that out, but it's a gamble, you know, every horse, it's a gamble. And, you know, we probably concentrate more on Kentucky and Florida now, a few at Saratoga every now and then.
It depends on, sometimes we have people that are interested in buying and we look for people. We don't play at the upper end of the market. That's not our deal. But a lot of people are more interested in buying a true racehorse, and they can get by with buying a yearling that the pinhookers won't mess with because it has issues, which don't mean diddly as far as a racing career, as far as we're concerned. But the pinhookers have to have it ready for the sales next spring. So it all depends what we're looking for.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier too that you breed to race is mm-hmm. your philosophy. It was always mine too, because I would only sell them after I got them ready and people saw they could run and everybody wants them.
Yes.
That's right.
But if you just breed to sell them, you don't really breed much of a good product, do you? I mean,
well, that's how I feel.
I think you and I are on the same page on a lot of things.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, we, you know, our turnout paddocks are big, you know, and And what just drives me wild is about 2 months or 2.5 months before yearling sale, we have to start bringing those yearlings in the daylight to keep them out of the sun so they won't get sunburned. It's just, to me, has nothing to do with anything except it's all cosmetic.
Right.
And horses need sun. We all need sun. So that's a pet peeve of mine, but we do it because that's what the market demands.
Mm-hmm. You know, this has been an extremely enjoyable visit. Believe it or not, only about 2 minutes left before we have to wrap up the program here. And can't thank our special guests, Kim and Bonnie Heath, enough for being with us. Again, you can go to BonnieHeathFarm.com to visit their website and make sure you stop by the farm if you're in that Ocala, Florida area. They are about 15 minutes north in Redick. All right, we're going to do this very quickly. I like to end the show by asking people to let us know a little something about them that people might not know. So we're going to play a little game, and it's five fast facts to know about Kim and Bonnie Heath. I'm going to ask you each one quick question, and you can answer it. We'll do it five questions. I'll ask you a question. You answer it very quickly, okay? So they're easy, right? Kim's looking at me like, are you crazy? All right. So, Kim, you can have one meal, one final meal. What's it going to be?
Steak.
Bonnie?
Redfish on the grill.
Ooh, well said. I think it's the first time we've gotten that answer. Favorite ice cream flavor?
Coffee.
Black raspberry with chocolate chips by Talente.
Wow, very specific.
Would you rather drive or fly, Kim?
Fly.
Bonnie?
Mixed. Depending on the distance, et cetera. Probably drive.
Okay. Favorite thing to do other than horse racing?
Art.
Beach.
There you go.
Fish.
And I'll make this last one very easy for you both. Your favorite horse of all time?
Got to be Holy Bull.
Oh, Holy Bull.
Yeah, kind of thought so.
Softball.
Yeah, I knew that one would be pretty easy. People already knew that, though. There wasn't really something that we didn't know about Kim and Bonnie. Kim, Bonnie, can't thank you enough for being with us. It's been a delight to hear your story, visit with you, and talk a little bit about Holy Bull, too.
Thank you for having us. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. And don't forget, if you did miss any portion of the show, head on over to horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast. You can also do that on iTunes, Horse Racing Radio Network. Fun stuff, Pontiff.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. Nice way to spend the afternoon.
Make sure you tune in next week for an all-new edition of Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by our friends at Fasic Tipton. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for our special guests, Kim and Bonnie Heath, and for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We will talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.